Hey, this is Malcolm Brogdon, and this is the Sideline Guys Podcast.
Hi, Pacers fans. Welcome into a Sideline Guys Thursday. We appreciate you waiting one more day on us this week. The Tuesday-Wednesday games are not normal, but we had them this week and wanted to make sure we had the ample time to give you our weekly coverage. And excited to be joined by a guest this week, former Pacer. You see him on TV coverage. You hear him on radio coverage. Eddie Gill is with us. Welcome, Eddie. It's good to have you here on the podcast. I think we had you on over the summer talking about a lot of hard-hitting issues with racial equality and social justice, and you were so well-spoken and eloquent and powerful in those words, and we appreciated them. And we'll have you on here to talk a bit more of a lighter subject, some Pacers basketball here today.
I like it. I appreciate it, guys, having me. It's always a pleasure. Love what you guys are doing here, and happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, Eddie, I just wanted to say that it's been fun having you on Pacers Live pre and post game every single game this year. You know, we do things a little bit differently because of the pandemic. So it's allowed you to work every single game. And so have you enjoyed getting in a little bit of a routine on the television side of things, not just with us, but then also calling some of the games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse with Mark Boyle?
It's been great. I think I may speak for the group. Just for a moment and thinking that, you know, we all have a good group that we work with. It's a pleasure coming in. I look forward to coming in. And, you know, there's some folks out there that don't have that luxury. So I'm grateful for each and every game and have had a great time with you, JJ, over the last, I guess this is our fifth year now together. And obviously joining Mark and Pat on the radio as well has been really fun. So, yeah, I'm just looking forward to it and can't wait to sit next to you at the desk again.
You know, before we get into this Pacers last handful of games and some trends you're noticing, Eddie, I want to ask you on a broadcast side, you're doing the work with JJ pre and post. You're coming over on radio for 15 games a year, but those are two completely different mediums. And while you're giving analysis in both, the way you have to give analysis is very different in-game on radio versus pre and post on TV. Television obviously has a lot more moving parts that you have to be aware of. What's it like to put on these different hats? And oftentimes, I mean, you're literally, I don't know if you're running, I haven't seen a camera on you, but you are at least, I would guess, sprint walking from the television Fox Loft over to the radio booth from your pregame hits to work as a color analyst.
Yeah, those days when I'm doing double duty, it's pretty interesting. Manageable, but interesting for sure in terms of getting back and forth from location to location. But in reference to the different dynamics of doing the pregame and post on the television broadcast and then sitting alongside you and Mark Boyle, it's definitely a different dynamic in terms of how you have to kind of be, you know, with Mark, you know, he's so great at what he does and really painting the picture for the listeners. I have to really be strategic in the times that I get in and get out to provide some analysis on what I'm seeing out there. And then on the pre and post game on television, we have a little bit more time to kind of dive in on certain aspects of the game or certain players or different strategies and plays and so forth, you know, those types of things. So it's definitely two different hats that I have to try to put on, and hopefully I'm managing okay up to this point.
The way that I always kind of frame this for people that ask about doing color analysis on the radio is your role is very important, but it's almost like if you were watching the TV, every time that you talk, it would be as if the picture went out, because Mark Boyle, for lack of a better term, is the picture on radio, because unlike TV, you can't talk over the images. So you're right in that it's a very challenging medium to learn, because you're so used to giving as much analysis as you can, but on the radio side, you have to be really quick hitting. And one thing I'm curious about, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but when you're a player, every player I'm sure views things differently, but you were the more cerebral type of a player. Were you thinking at all in your playing days about your post playing day career, and did TV, did radio, when did broadcasting enter that mix as a potential avenue for you?
I definitely thought about it. I think we've seen a number of players kind of make that transition. You know, to everyone's opinion, you know, some guys are better than others in the way they make that transition and the way they're able to deliver the messages on TV or radio. So I've definitely thought about it, you know, while I was a player. I tried to be one of these guys who could understand that you're not going to play forever as much as I would like to. So I would say on the back half of my career, I really started to think about what that transition may be like. So I did think about it, but ultimately it wasn't something that I wanted to really go full bore and pursue and really just try to jump after it right out the gate. Just fortunate enough to be around the Pacers organization, doing a lot of different community events and community involvement and working with them on a number of different things. And then position opened up, got a call from Jamie Burns, and we talked about it. Came and did a 5-minute run through with JJ, and here we are 5 years later. So, that's kind of how that all transpired. Quite honestly, I was just fortunate to be in the right place at the right time, and Pacers organization been great to me ever since.
I still remember getting that phone call saying, "Hey, JJ, can you come down at about 3 o'clock on Friday? I want you and Eddie to do a little breakdown." And you know, it's the off season at that time, so it wasn't even topical necessarily to what was going on. But you know, it was a match that worked well, and I'm glad that we're still together. Now that we have all that kind of fun, lighthearted stuff out of the way, we do have to kind of get down to business a little bit, because I think those downloading and listening to this podcast want your opinion, your analysis as to what's going on with this Pacers team. And I feel like this week it's been a little bit of the best of times and the worst of times, because for three quarters against Philadelphia, it was the best of times. And then you saw a fourth quarter, really a futility, to basically, to put it in honest terms. And then against Memphis, you have a team that had won 7 straight games, and you absolutely dominated them from start to finish, and then completely the other end against Milwaukee on Wednesday. So you've been there, done that. You've seen it all in the NBA, but I'm not sure in a span of 3 games you could see, if you're thinking about maybe a stock chart going up and down, the swings as much as we've seen with the Pacers this week.
Sure, you're talking about one heck of a roller coaster the Pacers have been on, especially through the month of January, in terms of these types of swings, and you even mentioned this last week has been quite the roller coaster. I think it's in large part to what they're doing or not doing defensively on a consistent level. I think offensively they really haven't seen any struggles throughout the season, with the exception of that fourth quarter against the 76ers. So I think that part of the game has been buttoned up pretty well. They got a number of guys who can score, a number of guys who can make plays, doing a lot of things in really in a career fashion on the offensive end of the floor. Just defensively, just haven't been able to put together strings of games where they're playing at a really high level, connected, communicating. Just haven't been able to get that done. So when you're inconsistent on the defensive end of the floor, you're going to see these types of swings, because you won't shoot, you know, 55-60% from the floor every single night and really cover up some of those defensive mistakes. You know, those nights where you're shooting 45% or lower, your defense really has to be on point.
And this was a team that for so many years, defense was sort of its calling card, and the offense had to try to keep up with the defense. And we've seen not necessarily a role reversal, but as you mentioned, you're not having as many problem scoring points. The shot distribution, I think, is better. You're seeing more threes, more layups, less of the mid-range, but you're not going into these games locking down the opponents. Maybe certain stars are not having big games, but the defensive rating is kind of middle of the pack, and that's, I think, not what Pacers fans were used to seeing. Is it expected, though, because of the really completely different mindset that I think Nate Bjorken and his staff is trying to get these guys, a group that was pretty much all together last year, the players, but this new defensive philosophy, that it will take time?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. You have an entirely new coaching staff. Maybe there's some different strategies that they're trying to put in place, you know, change up things a little bit. And it's tough to do that, you know, when you're going from man to zone to a box and one to, you know, to triangle and twos, and some of these different defensive schemes that they're going with, albeit they can be effective. But when you're bouncing back and forth, in some cases, it's a little bit tougher. I think just as a whole, you mentioned that this group has been together, the veteran players. There's a good mix of young guys and veteran players with that great presence there. So I think ultimately they know as a group what they need to do. It's just a matter of going out there and executing it night in and night out, and not just, you know, every once in a while.
JJ, you said a moment ago, talking about a stock chart and a symbol that has been going up and down, and maybe one that we haven't seen. You know, though, we have a lot of Reddit fans that listen to the podcast, and I would actually argue that GameStop stock has had more wild fluctuations than the Pacers over the last couple of weeks. Eddie, you're in the financial realm. Maybe you've followed that as well, but I'm not sure that we've seen anything quite like that.
Well,
not to sidetrack us, you just got me on that. Yeah.
Exactly. To our Reddit fans and followers, I would like to know if any of our Pacers Reddit crew have been going to that the stock market side of Reddit, and if any of them have any great stories to share, and maybe even some newfound wealth if they timed it correctly. You know, Eddie and I are up there. Sometimes these road games are a little bit lonely. There's no free meal on the road games. If anybody's, you know, wants to contribute, we're ready, right, Eddie?
There's no question. I'm taking all contributions right now. It's a different time.
Yeah.
Hey, if that deep value guy, who's the one who started the
exactly.
whole thing, is a Pacers fan, I think he can get more than dinner. All right, let's get out of the weeds, though, Eddie.
Yeah.
You're so good at breaking down the game from a personal perspective, a strategy perspective, but I want to start with my line of questioning, just kind of big picture here. We know the Pacers won't have Caris LeVert for the foreseeable future. They won't have TJ Warren for the foreseeable future. We don't have any new information since we last had a podcast, so there's nothing to update in that regard. But it seems reasonable that this is going to be your team, and maybe you should say hopefully will be your team for the next at least month plus, as long as this group can stay healthy. And as I started to think about it, you know, I think as currently assembled, if you didn't have those guys the rest of the year, you've got a playoff team. But you also probably right now don't have a contender type team until you can get those two players back. So from a bigger picture standpoint, and you've been through this in a lot of different ways with having players injured, players not available for portions of the season around teams that you've been on. What's the key to stemming the tide here from getting us to where we are right now to hopefully when those guys get back and being in a position where you feel like once that happens, you can really take advantage?
Yeah, I think there are some guys right now who are getting an opportunity who may see a more limited role once those guys do come back. But continually keeping guys engaged is super important. Continually encouraging guys and giving them the latitude to play their game and be aggressive, because you don't know, you don't know if it, you know, we think they're coming back. We don't know when that's happening. We don't know what shape they will be in. We don't know where they'll be in mentally and physically. So you got to continue to keep these guys engaged that are playing now that you know, haven't seen the extended minutes that they're seeing now. And then also, you know, when and if those guys do come back, you know, continue to nurture those guys. You know, for example, if Caris LeVert and TJ Warren are able to get back in, you got to really try to slowly bring them along, you know, not force the issue, but, you know, work them into the fold as quickly as you can, because to your point, if those guys do come back healthy and full go, you do have a contender in the East.
When you look at the potential for the Pacers roster with LeVert and Warren, and you noted that it's a lot simpler than just plugging and playing there. You're going to have guys that have been out for extended periods of time, trying to, you know, in Warren's case, rehab, trying to get back into a rhythm, get into physical shape. It's a lot more than just inserting a guy like a fantasy lineup. That said, I find the Pacers pretty fascinating because they don't have a Giannis. They don't have a Kevin Durant. But 1 through 5, and especially when you get that 1 through 5 back, what it does to the bench, bringing potentially Lamb off the bench and making, you know, Justin Holiday come off the bench and Aaron Holiday come off the bench. And all of a sudden your second unit starts to look pretty good. I think 1 through 9 or 10, the Pacers are as deep with their talent as any team in the NBA. And this is a superstar league. And as somebody that has played in the NBA, you know that as well as anybody. That said, I find the Pacers in a pretty fascinating position if they can get all those guys back, because I'm not sure another team has quite what Indiana has. And I don't know, it's just a different wrinkle. It's kind of, it would be fascinating to me to watch a team like that go against a real top-heavy team that maybe has a couple of superstars but doesn't have 5 players capable of scoring 20 points per game. How do you see this potentially all playing out if Indiana can get healthy, and hopefully that happens this season?
I think that maybe their biggest asset, their biggest strength is their depth. I mean, it's great to have two potential all-stars and one former all-star in Domantas Sabonis and obviously Malcolm Brogdon, who have done a tremendous job leading this team to start the season. But when you bring those two guys back, once again, your bench unit is really strong. Last year, that you can make an argument that bench unit won a handful of games for the Pacers when the starting lineup either was playing subpar basketball or they were playing even basketball to the other starters. But when those bench units came on the floor, that's when the Pacers were able to command a lead and the starting unit maybe hold on to it late. And we often saw, you know, a number of guys who are quote unquote coming off the bench close games out for this Pacers team last year. And we've seen a little bit of that this year as well. So I think the depth is really important for this team. The front office has done a great job of putting a team together that does have, you know, a 10-man rotation if Nate Bjorkman would like to go to that. Especially early on in this season. Now, obviously, as the playoffs wear on, you'll see teams, just about every team will shorten the rotation and go down to an 8 or 9-man rotation. But through the bulk of this season, the Pacers, with a healthy roster, can easily have a 10-man rotation.
Before we continue to look ahead and think more big picture, I do want to look back to the game in Milwaukee, as painful as it was. And Pat, actually, I wanted to go back to you. You know, Eddie and I were on Pacers Live postgame, and just so those listening and you know, watching our coverage, understand how things work. We have a limited amount of time for that post-game show, and we always can hopefully get Nate Bjorkgren's comments on. Occasionally, you know, hopefully we get a good interview with Pat Boylan, but sometimes the interview room isn't open for while we are on the air. So we didn't get a chance to really hear some of the player perspective, but I know, Pat, you were listening in to some of the comments, and Domantas Sabonis said something interesting. I wondered if you could paraphrase a little bit, Pat.
Yeah, he certainly did, and I will just a second, I think it may be worthwhile. I'm not sure if we've done this yet, just kind of explaining exactly how these work now, because you might be wondering, especially our diehards who watch every second of the pregame through the postgame, why sometimes we have one-on-one interviews with players. Sometimes you only hear from the coach. Sometimes we get three or four players on a postgame show. That is not us selectively choosing necessarily not to have guys because of a loss or anything like that. Essentially, first and foremost, we're at the mercy, even in a normal environment, of when the guys want to talk. And so you will see that happen in a normal year. Sometimes we get more guys than other shows, just because sometimes players want to go right away. Sometimes they want to shower. And sometimes what happens in the game can affect that, too. If there's a good win, sometimes they're ready to talk right away. And if it's a tough loss, maybe we want to let 10 more minutes of steam come off in the shower. But in this scenario, we have to be ready. There's no cool down period. So we have to be ready for an interview almost exactly as those guys walk off the floor. There have been times where Domantas Sabonis has walked off the floor and gone straight into the interview room before he even hits the locker room, which is very different. But at the same time, you have scenarios where now guys choose to do the interview room last after they've already showered, changed, and then they have to walk to a different room. So it's a logistical challenge. I imagine for PR staffs, it's very challenging, and I think they all deserve a major hat tip for helping us pull this off. But that's what's happening for a game like last night, for example, where we only got the coach, versus a game like a couple nights ago against Memphis, where I think we got an immediate one-on-one and multiple players. Unfortunately, we're just at the mercy of the circumstances. That said, Domantas Sabonis did have kind of an interesting comment. And I don't want to necessarily overplay this, because I don't think he was saying this as any sort of shot at himself or his team or his teammates. But he did say essentially something along the lines of, we have to go into these games against teams like Milwaukee, against the top teams in the East, Philadelphia, which I think they did a good job against Philadelphia. But these top tier teams, we have to go in with the mindset that we're every bit as good as them. And we can't go in, you know, intimidated at all. And I'm not sure if he necessarily saw that in that game against Milwaukee or if he's seen that before. But I think what his point essentially is the fact that, look, we're not 100% right now, but we've got the kind of team that we believe will contend in the Eastern Conference. And we should have the attitude like that. And I thought it was interesting because oftentimes, you know, DeMontis is not the most outspoken player. He's a little bit more quiet and reserved. But at least in a game like last night, I found what he had to say to be the most interesting of all the players or anything Nate Bjorkman said.
So with that as sort of the backdrop, I look at the box score, and Eddie and I were talking on the postgame show saying this was maybe one of those nights that the final team stats did not really tell the story, because after being down by 40 and then eventually losing by 20, it kind of evened out a little bit. And I'm not sure that you necessarily say, oh, well, look, points in the paint. The Pacers had 56 and the Bucks had 48. They must have been doing something right. But the one thing that jumps out to me, Eddie, when I look at the box score and I kind of think back to that game is, you know, DeMontis Sabonis set a career high, not just in points, though, but in field goal attempts. And he had 25 of those, and I think maybe even 23 in the through three quarters. And what you saw was a strategy defensively that I don't think we've seen this season, where Milwaukee was content to let DeMontis Sabonis have shots, kind of do what he wanted. They were backing off like we've never seen. And you noticed it from really the first couple of possessions in the game. You said, look at Brook Lopez. He's not even coming close to getting out there. And it caused, I think, DeMontis, with that aggressive mindset, with what he said after the game of not being scared, wanting to attack, he did that. He attacked. He was not scared. But it wasn't that sort of team basketball that I think this group kind of thrives on. And it's not DeMontis's fault, because you love that aggressiveness, but it was almost like the Bucks said, here, do this. He did, but then everybody else just kind of stood and watched a little bit. And I found that game, the more I think back to it, really kind of fascinating in a way, because we'll see how teams choose to defend the Pacers moving forward. But that was an interesting decision by Milwaukee, and one that really kind of paid off.
Yeah, very interesting. As you mentioned, I noticed it early on in the game with Brook Lopez, and seeing him play this type of defense the last couple of times we've seen them. Sometimes he's matched up. He has been matched up against Miles, and Miles has gotten, especially last year, I can't remember which game it was, but they were playing a pick-and-roll situation. Miles must have had like 7 3-point attempts in the first half because Brook Lopez was just standing in the paint on the pick-and-pop situations. This time he's matched up with DeMontis Sabonis. And he just like, hey, I'm going to meet you at the charge circle. If you want to come in here, that's when I'll decide to guard you. Other than that, you know, take as many shots as you want from the perimeter. And DeMontis Sabonis, to his credit, he did a nice job of attacking him and finding a way to get to the rim on occasion and not just settling for jumpers, although he did take a few. But, yeah, that was definitely the game plan, was to let Domas just, hey, you can get as many shots as you want, especially from the perimeter. If you can make those out there, then good luck. But other than that, they were going to meet him at the charge circle and try to defend him there. They were going to play one-on-one basketball also. They weren't going to double DeMontis Sabonis and let him kick out to open three-point shooters. So that's, you know, I think that was the result of him getting those 25 shot attempts and a career high in points scored. So, yeah, it's, in reference to his comment, you know, they should believe that they're the best team on the floor. They should go out there and respond to the challenge to some of these higher echelon teams, and to really see where they are as a team and really try to get to that point. You know, I will say that the Bucks are an absolute matchup nightmare in the sense that they can play one-on-one. If DeMontis Sabonis decides he wants to post up the whole game, Brook Lopez can play him one-on-one down there because of his size and strength, and then they can stay matched up. But, yeah, they're a tough out. Obviously, you got two-time MVP and Giannis Antetokounmpo, what he's able to do in transition. I think he's grown as a player and not just forcing it one-on-three. If you commit all those defenders to him, yeah, he's going to kick it out, and they would love to shoot the three ball all night, which is also what they did last night. So it is very interesting dynamic to see how teams guard the Pacers moving forward. You know, is this kind of the test run for them? Also, they had some trouble with that 2-3 against Philly. I thought we might see more of that. We didn't. So, you know, it's I love the evolution of each and every season.
And then a defensive thought, Giannis 7 for 8. And as you mentioned, he's content to dish if pressured or doubled, or if the teams decide they want to get the ball out of his hands. I'm curious, though, if you decide to implement a similar strategy with Giannis that the Bucks had on Sabonis, where you've got someone packing the paint and saying, do whatever you want, but once you get 4 feet from the basket, we're going to be all over you. If it might work, now he gets a full head of steam and he's so used to attacking the basket, I think it might be too late at that point. He's a little bit different player than Sabonis. At the same time, we've seen when the Pacers try to force the ball out of superstars' hands, we've seen the other guys really have a lot of success. Bryn Forbes, 4 for 7 from three. And the list goes on in the game against Milwaukee.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I would agree with you. Those two, you can't play that way against Giannis because he is so good in transition. And he's one of these guys that if you try to play off, I've never been a big fan of backing off of guys who quote unquote can't shoot. Because they're so good. You might be able to do that in the middle school and high school, but in the NBA, these guys are too good. Ben Simmons is another guy that we've seen teams just decide they want to back off, but they're so crafty with their ball handling ability and get you to leaning one way or the other. And once they attack your hips, it's over. Now it's probably an and one poster at the rim, or if you got multiple defenders in there, now they're spraying it out to a 3-point shooter. So I'm always of the mindset, if you can stop these guys earlier and get in their space before they get momentum, the better. Not saying that it's an easy task either, because now and then you're starting to talk about, hey, are we going to get in foul trouble because of playing too aggressive? So by no means is it easy, but I think I mentioned it last night on the show. If it were easy, everyone would be doing it.
Right.
It's just something you got to figure out a way to do, because when these guys have space, that means trouble for the defense.
While we're on the topic of Sabonis, a couple interesting trends with him. He's been given a lot more freedom, and that's kind of an interesting comment within itself because this is a guy that already had a lot of freedom. But two things that I've noticed, Eddie, the most about how Domantas Sabonis's game style is different this year, besides the fact that he seems to have taken another step forward, is that he's handling the ball in transition a lot more, and he's shooting a lot more threes. Neither of these things are probably listed in his immediate biggest strengths, but when you've got a guy as talented as he is, really putting the ball in his hands, you almost can't do it too much. And that's why I find it fascinating when teams decide to double him. He's such a good passer and he can beat you in so many ways that the double works on him probably not nearly as well as it would against most bigs. That said, you've seen a good amount of threes from him. You've seen a lot of him running the floor. To you, what's that perfect mix of, I think most people would say, yeah, Sabonis probably should be shooting a few more threes. That 18-foot jump shot can easily step out a few more feet and become a more efficient shot. But at the same point, you don't want to take him away from where he is really his most dynamic, which is around the rim and his playmaking inside the paint.
I would say overall, in terms of those two different pieces of the game where he's shooting a three ball and then pushing it on the break. If I had to pick one I'd like to see less of, it would be pushing it on the break. And I don't know if it's an old school theory of mine or what, because I know the game has evolved and guys 1 through 5 are
once a guard, always a guard.
Yeah, because it used to light my fire when Big decides he wants to bounce the ball to half court and then pass to me. I'm like, what are you doing? So that definitely, maybe I got some bias and, you know, maybe I got some PTSD over the whole issue. But yeah, I'm definitely of the mindset to outlet it to a guard, run the floor, get in drag situation, and then get rewarded at the rim. But in for Domas's particular situation, and you know, 3-point shots, if a guy has been working on a shot during the offseason, he's capable of taking that shot regardless of position. You got an open shot, I say take the shot. Now, having said that, we know he really sets the table and eats in the paint, right? So we know he dominates in there. You know, I don't think Domas is ever going to be taking, you know, 3-point shots a game. So the shots that he's taking now, you know, I feel like I don't even know. You guys probably had the attempts. You know, I got to believe it's somewhere in between 2 to 4 threes a game. You know, we have seen, you know, some games where it seems like, man, he's got 3-point shots up already and it's the first quarter. But having said that, I think over by and large, he's probably taking 2 to 4 threes a game, which I think is definitely reasonable. He's definitely – he started the season out knocking them down at a really high clip, cooled off a little bit, but – I see no issue in there, him taking open 3-point shots, as long as he's not, you know, he doesn't turn into Steph Curry on us and he's launching them. But overall, I would say, man, I'm definitely a proponent of outletting that basketball to a guard.
and always will be. Hey, I want to ask you something on the defensive end.
Unless you're Kevin Durant. He's like the only player who can do it.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Giannis, too, I think probably has the green light in transition.
You can probably pick five guys who are 6'10 or above who are really good with the ball in their hands, coast to coast.
I want to ask you on the defensive side of things. You know, I find this year really interesting, if for nothing else, because you can really see the impact of coaching, because you have almost the exact same team back as last year. So any changes, positive or negative, you can make the case are a part of what the new coaching staff has brought in the game plan. And I think had you told me the Pacers would go from 19th to 8th in offense with the same personnel, that's shockingly good. I mean, that's really hard to do. It's amazing to me that the same group of players that finished 19th in offense last year can be 8th in offense this year. At the same point, we have gotten so spoiled with great defenses over the last 20 years. You were a part of those. I mean, it is amazing if you go back to the Larry Bird era. I think maybe two times over the past 20 plus years, the Pacers have been in the bottom half of the NBA in defense and almost always in the top 10 and very often in the top 5. So an interesting trend this year. The offense compared to last year has taken a major step forward. The defense, as we're talking right now, typically has been in the 10 to 15 range. It's actually 16th right now after that Milwaukee game. So this is going to sound so simple, and I know it's not simple, which is why I'm asking you, how do you improve the defense and get it back closer to last year's levels without it costing you on the offensive end?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think with the aggression that everyone's playing with, and I'll attribute the big jump in offensive production to what Malcolm Brogdon has been able to do. He's a lot more aggressive to score the basketball, especially coming off of pick and roll situations. The bigs are not there. He's shooting it at a really high level and making the right decisions there. And Domantas Sabonis, obviously, a lot of times he's the next guy who receives that pass, and he's making great decisions. So they're getting open shots. Justin Holiday is shooting it at a really high level. Jeremy Lamb's shooting at a really high level. So offensively, that's there. And sometimes you get so confident in the way you're playing offense, the focus on the defensive floor and may slip. That's just sometimes a natural progression. I think it's really something that they got to lock in mentally on. This is a mental thing and not a physical thing, because as you mentioned, it's the same group that we saw last year. And we saw how good they were over that entire season defensively. So it's definitely not a personnel thing or physical thing. It's a mental approach to the game, and that they just have to just lock in on and saying, hey, we're going to come down here and really focus on this end. And it may sacrifice what we do offensively. We may not be able to play as fast, or we may not be able to take as quickest shots or whatever it may be. Although I think they're taking good shots anyway, even though they may be playing faster, I still think they're all taking good shots. But it's a mental focus that you have to bring on that end of the floor.
Let's look ahead, not necessarily big picture, but at the weekend coming up. And when you maybe take these five games, starting with Philadelphia, ending with Utah as a group, I think 3-2 would be acceptable. Even though four of those games are at home, and you still have that opportunity, and it starts with Friday night's game against New Orleans. This is a team that really loves to crash the glass, and so I have a feeling rebounding, Eddie, will be a topic of conversation before, during, and after the game against the Pelicans. The Pacers have shown a little bit this week that they are improving on the glass, especially that first half against Memphis with those 21 second chance points, but you'll have to really block out Steven Adams and Zion Williamson.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Steven Adams is the guy who can dominate the game just in the paint himself, just by rebounding the basketball on both ends of the floor. He's another guy I anticipate getting some one-on-one action with Domantas Sabonis down there in the post, which will leave everyone else out kind of on the perimeter, man-to-man. They got a guy, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson. All these guys have great length and athleticism. So it's definitely a challenge for the Pacers from a rebounding perspective. And even on the defensive end of the floor, they're going to get tested for sure. We mentioned earlier and joked about guys who are 6'10", who can catch the ball and go from rim to rim. Brandon Ingram is another one of those guys. He's really improved his game last year, most improved player. So tough challenge coming up these last couple games for the Pacers.
And maybe if I could look ahead to Utah with you, it's so rare that the Pacers are playing a game on Super Bowl Sunday. I don't remember the last time it has happened. It has not happened, I don't believe, during my time traveling and covering the team the last 7 years. So it's a 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon, Super Bowl Sunday tip against the team that has pretty much been the hottest one in the entire NBA, the Utah Jazz. First question, do you think they are a NBA title contender, given what they have on their roster and especially the way they've played of late?
Yeah, first of all, Super Bowl Sunday should be a national holiday.
No, Monday, right? I mean,
exactly. Along with the opening round of the NCAA tournament, you know, just as a side note, those two. So I'm not sure what we're doing, but I'm glad. But anyway, I do think that those guys are going to present some challenges for sure. They got a solid team in what they do defensively. Donovan Mitchell has been fantastic for that team, especially the last couple seasons. You got a guy who's a go-to guy, you know, that he can close the game out for you. Joe Ingles, a guy who can make plays. Rudy Gobert, you know, defensive player of the year last year. And so, yeah, they definitely are challenging. Do I think they're a championship contender? I do not. I think you get them in a seven-game series against the, you know, for example, the Lakers out west. They're probably not going to come out of that. I think they would have, their hands full against Denver, the Clippers. So I don't know that they're ready for championship caliber as of yet. But they, now, having said that, I don't think they would win, against, for example, the Lakers. But it definitely wouldn't be an easy series for that team either. So as of now, they're a great team, especially in the regular season. They can beat anybody in the league.
Eddie, before we let you go, at least final thoughts from me are a little bit un-Pacer related. I've been looking at your social media, and the first thing I wanted to ask you is, if you were in your prime, you posted a picture. Let me foreshadow this a bit. You posted a picture of your son doing what is some sort of reverse dunk. His head is hitting the net. His hands are about to dunk the ball, and you look like you are watching in awe. I'm wondering if in your primes, if you could somehow head back, 20 years or so, who's the better dunker?
He's probably the better dunker. I will say that I could do like what's in that picture, but he was doing that when he was 16 years old. And it took me until I got to be about a junior in college before I could do any of that. But yeah, he's a gifted athlete, and my wife, his mother, will tell you that it's all due to her, and I have nothing to do with it, which is probably the case. She was a collegiate volleyball athlete herself, so she could get off the floor a little bit too. But yeah, his athleticism is pretty special. He's got a gift.
Well, as somebody who's 6'4 and can't dunk, I just look at that and am supremely jealous because I was given all the height genes and none of the athletic genes. But that's a really cool picture, by the way. For those who haven't seen it, if you're not following for Eddie Gill, the number four Eddie Gill, you can watch or you can check out that picture. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about it, is your son is actually part of what I think is one of the most unique initiatives. And if you don't have all the information in front of you, I've got it pulled up here so I can help you. But can you talk a little bit about the diversity and inclusion initiative that he has started up within the fishing industry?
Absolutely. So I'll go back a little bit. And it's kind of about what you opened up this podcast with, our conversation regarding, you know, some of the social inequities out there, especially after the George Floyd incident. I feel like it was a big topic for good reason, long overdue topic to be addressed by all of us. So, you know, in having conversations with my family and specifically my kids, both he and my daughter, they were incredibly frustrated about everything that was going on. And I'm like, hey, we can all be upset, and I'm just as upset as you are, but what can we do to be a part of the solution and not the problem? Outside of complaining, right? Complaining is definitely something we should do and voice our opinions about things that are going on, just to, you know, make sure we're not acting as though these things aren't happening. So definitely should voice our concerns. But after that, okay, where's the call to action? What can we do to make things better for everyone? So they both started brainstorming different things that they can do. My son is a big door outdoorsman. He loves to fish. He loves the boating industry. He loves to be out on the water. He loves to just be one with nature. And people see him as an athlete most oftentimes, you know, because he is. But they really have no clue that, you know, if I ask him today, right now, hey, do you want to go fishing or play ball? He's going to say, let's go fishing. So that's who he is, and that's his passion. So, you know, we love to continue to support that and encourage that. So so he started what's called Journey for a Cause, and that basically is he's going to take a fishing trip from southern Indiana down to Navarre Beach in Florida, and he's going to make all these different stops along the way. And he even got a company called Parker Boats. They're going to donate a boat to him to go on this journey. And ultimately, his bigger goal is to really expose this industry to communities that it has not been exposed to individuals who think that, you know, this just isn't for them just by virtue of the color of their skin. It is a lot of groups that have been just completely X'd out of this industry by the virtue of the color of their skin. So he's trying to combat all of that, you know, and go on this voyage, start to tap into different communities, start to expose some different youth organizations to what the boating industry and the fishing industry and just outdoor life is about as a whole. And, you know, see if he can provide some unity while he's doing it.
It's a very cool initiative, JJ. And I'm going to give the where you can find it on Instagram here, the handles. If you search Journey, the number four, a cause, Journey, the number four, a cause on Instagram, you can find the entire initiative that is being headed up there by Eddie's son. And there is a link there. If you have the means to, you can help donate to the cause. It's just in the description. So Journey for a Cause, if you're interested in learning more on that. Sorry, JJ, go ahead.
All good. Great initiative and great work by the family coming together. And as you said, instead of just complaining, deciding to take action. And so maybe my final thought will be you've been busy. You know, you've got a day job. You work with us every single Pacers game. And then many times during the games, you've got your second screen up watching Grace College men's or women's basketball. So how is the season going for the kids?
It's going well. That earlier in the season, they've obviously had their bouts with COVID, with postponements, cancellations. My daughter's team, they had a breakout themselves. 9 girls, 3 coaches, all tested positive, including my daughter at one point. She was quarantined in my basement for a couple weeks. Fortunately, they all came back, made a full recovery. There are a lot of people who are not that fortunate. So, again, we're grateful and thankful that they were able to do that. But up to this point, they've done well. You know, my daughter's her freshman year. There's some bumps in the road there for her, for the women's team right now. My son's team has done pretty well to start this season. I think they beat Indiana Wesleyan, who's the number one team in the country, a couple weeks ago. Then they beat St. Francis, can't remember who it was. Anyway, 20th ranked team in the country. So they've had their successes here. They're about third or fourth, I think, in their conference. So they're both doing well and just trying to get through. And obviously, just like everybody else, is adapt and make adjustments along the way in this COVID era that we're all in.
Yeah, quick scan of the schedule. Looks like Grace College Saturday afternoon against number one Indiana Wesleyan. So a rematch should be a good one.
That's right. Yeah, they got them the first time up at Grace. This Saturday will be at Indiana Wesleyan. They've been a powerhouse in NAIA basketball for quite some time now. I didn't know that until my son joined that conference there a couple years ago, and they've been getting it done for a long time. So they'll have their work cut out for them on Saturday, especially a team that's looking for a comeback.
Boy, Eddie, I appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy, and I did want to, you know, I started by saying how much I've enjoyed having you on every show pre and post game, and we look forward to continuing this season. Maybe not as many roller coasters as we've seen the last 3 games moving forward, but that's one of maybe the good things about the NBA. You never really know what to expect.
Absolutely. You got to come bring your hard hat every single night, no matter who you are as a team, especially on any given night. Any team can beat another. I've been having a great time with you guys for sure on the broadcast and on the radio, and it's been awesome. I really enjoy covering this Pacers team. They're fun to watch and fun to cover for sure.
you know, considering all the work you're doing on TV, working, pulling double duty and joining us on the radio side, I think you were more than within your rights to say, "Nah, I'm going to pass on doing something broadcast related on an off day." So we very much appreciate your time here.
It's all good, man. I appreciate you guys. Let's do it again sometime before the season's over.
All right. That's Eddie Gill. By the way, if my schedule is correct, hopefully it is, you can catch him on the radio next on February 25th as the Pacers take on the Warriors. But plenty of chances to catch him on TV before that with Jeremiah Johnson before and after every single Pacers game on Fox Sports Indiana. For JJ, I'm Pat. That'll wrap it up this week. We hope to be back on our regular Wednesday schedule here going forward. And a little bit of a teaser, we hope to also have a Pacers player joining us in the near future. If you are not a subscriber, make sure you do so at Pacers Sound on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. For Eddie and JJ, I'm Pat. JJ and I will talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.